Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Black Swamp Percussion. School's back in full swing, and by now you probably have a good sense of what gear you'll need this semester.
No need to stress. Black Swamp Percussion and Steve Weiss Music have teamed up to bring you the Fall Sound Solution Project. From September 23rd to October 7th, you can save 15% on a huge lineup of snare drums, tambourines, triangles, accessories, and more. It's the perfect chance to upgrade your setup and save some cash.
Personally, I'm a big fan of Black Swamp's Mercury Series snare drum. I've had one for several years, and it's my go-to for any gig. It's super versatile, it sounds great in any situation. Whatever you need, this sale's got you covered.
No promo codes, no hoops to jump through. Just head over to Steve Weiss Music, grab your favorite Black Swamp gear, and lock in those savings. The Fall Sound Solution Project. Your sound, your solution, your savings.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Remy.
And my name is Kevin.
Do we say this is or I am? I can't remember.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Remy. Okay, good. how's it going, guy? How's it going, guys? You?
How's it going, guy? Me guy is doing good.
Guy, yeah.
I feel like it's the same, you know, same time frame as last year. Marching band is in full swing, and so it's just that whole chaos of trying to teach the high school kids how to play well on the drum line and also how to teach beginners to play well. And beginning of the year's, you know, in full swing and everything's going well, though. I mean, our marching band's doing well. My young kids are doing well. Are you guys having a good start to the season?
Yeah, man, this is actually probably definitely the furthest we've ever been in the show this early in the year. We're going to a BOA show this year pretty early on. So we actually had our opener on the field before school even began this year. And we're about to start putting our ballad this week, which is part 3 of 4. So we've got part 1 and 2 on the field, you know, halfway through the show. It still needs a lot of cleaning. It still needs choreo added and things like that. And then, yeah, my beginners are, you know, starting to figure them out a little bit. And then my other middle school kids are rocking along. So it's been good. My schedule changed this, which you know, but my schedule changed this year. So I'm able to see every kid every day, which is really nice. But I also don't get a plan or a lunch, really. So
there you go.
Yeah. But I do get paid a little extra for that.
Your brain doesn't get any rest and your stomach doesn't get any food.
Correct. Yeah. Actually, I do eat lunch as I drive across town. I eat lunch in my truck as I drive to the next school.
And an Uncrustable. You just have an Uncrustable.
15 of them. Yeah. And I throw my wrappers out the window.
There you go.
No, you don't. Don't litter, kids.
I mean, someone else can get your trash.
No. Single use plastic. A catastrophe. Anyway,
I love plastic forks.
We're talking about today tips to have a better drum line, to make the drum line. I mean, everyone's already, you know, either on the drum line or not. And if you're not on the drum line, that's fine. You don't have to be on the drum line, but we'll probably do a tips to make the front ensemble sometime too. But we're just talking about some skills that you definitely need if you want to be on the drum line. So maybe you're in a situation where you wanted to play on the drum line this year at your school and you didn't quite make it. And so you're playing an instrument that maybe wasn't your first choice, or maybe you are on the drum line, but maybe you auditioned for like snare or quads and you were put on a bass drum. And anyway, so this is just like some tips that we have that we've seen over the years that, you know, we kind of look for in young students to put in a position like that. Anything else to say about what this episode is about?
This topic jumped into my head because I think every year, and this is probably the same with any percussion director, drumline director, whatever, but I always, toward the beginning of the season, I'm like watching my kids and seeing what they struggle with and realizing like, I need to work on this thing more with my 8th graders or my 7th graders so that, you know, I think it's going to be more of an educational aspect for some people, like teachers, and not just students, but figuring out what techniques that you really need for the drum line, you know, for the marching percussion section, whether it's paradiddles or good downstrokes or whatever, but applying all of that in the younger years so that you're not having to struggle as much. Because I feel like every year I've got kids, and I'm not bashing my students right now, but I know one kid's going to listen to this and think I'm talking about him the whole time.
Yeah, Henry.
And you know exactly Henry, who I'm talking stink. About. Henry, yeah. What'd you say?
Stop being a tick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it's like just thinking about techniques to really focus on and telling those young kids, like, these are the things you'll need to be able to make the drum line or just have good technique.
Yeah.
All around.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to get us started with your first bullet point?
Yeah. So my first thing, and I kind of assume we're going to have some of the same points, kind of like always.
Probably not.
Okay. You're like, you don't know. Yeah, my first thing is you've got to have good control of all the stroke types. Most importantly, downstrokes. But if you have not, I mean, through 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, if you have not, maybe I shouldn't say the word mastered, but if you have not gotten a really good handle on the four stroke types, rebound, down, tap, and up, then you're kind of in trouble. So I really, really make that important for all my kids. And the ones that figure it out, the ones that can play really easily from rebound to down to tap and then to up, like kind of in that succession, they're usually the kids that make the instrument that they want to play. Again, we're talking specifically the battery, the drum line in this episode, but I don't want to leave out the front ensemble or make it seem like if you're in the front ensemble that you're not in the quote unquote good group of kids, you know? So if you don't have control of your strokes, you're not going to make it in the group you want to be in.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the technique is pretty different. Like I'm not saying that the drumline's better, the front ensemble's better, but I would say that the aggressiveness of your technique for, like you said, the four stroke types, I mean, that really does come into way more of use and importance if you're on a battery instrument.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to necessarily have perfection of those to play the concert bass drum. And I'm not saying concert bass drum is not important, but it's just a higher level of necessity when you're trying to get 3, 4, 5 snare drums to play the exact same thing.
Right.
So that was my, you know, that was one of my first things too, is like downstrokes. I, in my drum line right now, like, and honestly, any drum line probably I've ever taught or seen, is if they don't have a good idea of downstrokes and control of the stick at the lower end of things, then chances of anything they play being dirty just goes up and up and up. Yeah. So, I mean, you said you're not sure about using the word mastered. I would say that's, you're mastering it. I mean, I think a kid who's really serious about wanting to play a rudimental instrument can master a downstroke by the time they get into like 8th grade, 9th grade.
Yeah.
Like they should be able to really, really be able to handle that, or at least be 90% there.
Yeah, master it.
I think the majority.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just say that the majority of your kids, if they don't have a good idea of those stroke types, you're just going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe master it as much as an 8th or 9th grader can. Like, they're probably not going to have the level of someone that's been playing like as long as we have or anyone else, or is the level that the Boston Crusaders this year. That's my second tip, is learn the Boston Crusaders drum book from 2025.
Right.
Yeah. So just control those stroke types. And like Kevin said, control on the low end for sure. I mean, I don't know how many times I just like make the 3-inch like tap height, or like from Friends, like the Ross, like bringing your hands down, like lowering the heights, you know, when he's trying to get people to be more quiet. But anyway, yeah, just managing those heights is a huge thing, because the goal is to all play a downstroke and then have your stick freeze at the same height so that then whatever the next, you know, rudiment is, roll is, passage is, that that's all going to be at the same height. And if you've got five snares and all five of them have a downstroke that stops at a different point, then the next lick is going to be unbalanced. And even if everyone's playing in time, they're all at different heights, and then it creates dirt because it's not balanced from player to player. So, that's a really big one. I'm not done. Take your accent tap exercises seriously, even in 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And one for other,
sure. one of my tips for, I think it's easy to handle those kind of things if your school has a dedicated percussion person. But if they don't, you know, if you are a non-percussion person teaching 6th grade percussion, like, that's just something that they should be doing. If they're playing, you know, if you play out of essential elements and everybody's playing the exact same thing, tell your beginners to, like, okay, today when we play the quarter note line, do rebound strokes. Or today when we do the quarter note line, do down strokes. Like, have them actually be thinking about what happens after they hit the drum, whether they come up, down, whatever it is. They need to, it needs to be the same thing as any kind of other technique on any brass or woodwind instrument, for them to be successful when they get older. So do that, and that will make your high school kids, they'll play better.
Yeah, for sure.
And more together. So my first thing kind of leads out of that a little bit, but play with a full technique. And so it's kind of the same thing, but, like, do full technique of everything. So, like, when we're talking about a downstroke, you can also have, like, a kind of a half downstroke where you, which is not a good thing, I'm just saying, but so, like, you can bring the stick down for a downstroke. So a lot of kids will kind of let it bounce up maybe like 40, 50% of the way back up and then bring it back down, which is not an aggressive full downstroke, which again is going to make that millisecond of a difference when you've got a drum line trying to play together. So, and then the same thing goes with rebound strokes or legato strokes. It needs to be a full aggressive rebound strokes, like fast velocity, full stick heights, you know, good solid preps and stuff like that. It's the same thing as, you know, again, a brass or a woodwind having good breaths, you know, taking in the amount of air that they need and pushing that air through. That applies to percussion in the same way. So having full aggressive technique will help.
Yeah, I like you play better. I like aggressive, because you do have to be aggressive. Like, you've got to close your hand and, like, not, you know, not create tension, but, like, you've got to use some energy. You have to be a little bit aggressive to keep that stick from bouncing back up. Because if you're playing with the right velocity, which is another word that I really like to use, if you're playing with the right velocity, it's going to take a little bit of effort to stop the stick from coming up. So you've got to be aggressive with it.
And that's the biggest thing that makes a drum line dirty, is, like, if you've got, you know, for instance, I have two seniors in the middle. I have a sophomore on one side and a freshman on the other. And just watching them, you can tell who's playing full and who's not. And then the moment you tell them to play full as a group, it gets better.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge of just having younger kids on a snare line or a tenor line.
Yeah. And one thing that I will talk about too with that is, like, playing like full, all out, whatever you want to say, with velocity, with weight, with, you know, relaxed, no tension in your hands.
Right.
That's like flooring a car. That's like flooring your accelerator, and that's how you're going to get, like, that's the easiest way other than using cruise control, I guess. But, like, if a car has no cruise control, the only way to get, like, a consistent speed in that car is to just floor it, right? Because you have, like, your pedal to the metal, there's nowhere else to go. That would be, like, your full energy, right? It's harder to it's harder to hold it at, like, 65 and not let your foot, like, back off or inch forward a little bit at a time. Like, you're going to go, you know, up to 66 or 67, then you're going to have to let go and get down to 64 or 63. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just easier to just play all out with velocity, with weight. And then that's going to clean. I tell my kids that all the time. Like, more weight and more velocity is going to clean things up immediately. And it always does.
Yep.
So yeah, my next point really, again, kind of goes with that. And then I get into some different stuff, but you also have to master like the two height technique, which is kind of a combination of the things we were just talking about. So, accent tap exercises, or even things like 16th grid, where you're playing alternating accents, you know, 1-teta, 2-teta, 3-teta, 4-teta, 1-teta, 2-teta, where you're moving through different accent patterns, whether it's, you know, groups of threes, groups of fours, groups of fives, whatever, making
six,
sure.
Seven.
Sure. Sevens. What do you have any others? 13s.
Yeah. Any number.
Integer. Yeah. So in any combination, any accent pattern, whether it's same hand, alternating hand, with the, like, you know, paradiddles, paradiddle diddles, all of that two height stuff. And that's one thing where, I'm sure there are different schools of thought on this, but when I teach my students how to play rudimental snare drum, which is, you know, the learning vehicle for marching snare, but also quads and bass drum, like you're really just learning how to drum in a rudimental style. I teach them accents are at forte, everything else is at piano. Right. And then when you get into concert drumming, it's a little bit more gray. It's a little bit more nuanced. But just having the foundation of like understanding that your accents are going to be at 9 or 12, kind of depending on how old the kids are and how much control they have. But you've just got to understand that you have to have like a really stark difference between your accents and your taps and your upstrokes. So that it's that two height that I talk about a lot.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything to add to that other than doing that stuff when they're beginners is when it becomes easier as they get older to do that stuff, if you didn't know that.
Crap. Okay.
Yeah, so
it's me writing
stuff. On Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
On Monday. Monday.
All right. Hold drumsticks.
Yeah. And so my next thing is kind of like obvious, I guess it should be, but think about all the music that your kids play in marching band, and like that needs to be something that you focus on with your kids. So like I think for me, at least as a teacher, there's been a lot of negligence of really focusing on, you know, paradiddles and double paradiddles. Sorry, paradiddles and paradiddle diddles. I do not know why.
Paradiddle.
Do you ever do that? Do you get those two? Do you get, like, when you're just saying it without thinking about it, do you get paradiddle diddles and double paradiddles mixed up? Just the words.
I would love to help you and say that I do, but no, I don't. I don't. Honestly, it's
you don't.
Because I didn't even know what a double paradiddle was until I was, like, in college. I had played them, but I didn't know that there was like another rudiment. I thought it was just paradiddles and paradiddle diddles.
Okay.
So no, I don't ever get in a mix.
Yeah. My gosh. I do
but
nowadays.
But anyway, I understand it.
So like
parents do too.
Yeah. But paradiddles and paradiddle diddles are just something that like I am really starting to push those nowadays with my seventh and eighth graders, which again, that's, you know, and that's a great rudiment to apply everything we've already talked about, you know, good downstrokes, good control on the low end of things, not really much a rebound. I mean, you're not really rebounding much until you start, I guess you're doing like tap rebounds or double strokes when you're getting to the higher speeds of playing those, but
not like
those are in music a lot. Right. Yeah, not full rebounds. Yeah, like we talked about earlier. But yeah, so I would just say to implement those way more often and push your young kids to just explore playing those faster with good techniques, because that's going to be in your music all over the place. And I have neglected to do that as often as I should.
Yeah, and I'll
so learn from my detriment.
I'll add to that list like puttadas also. It's really in the same skill set. Like we have an exercise that we play called paradudda, and it's paradiddle, 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 putta, 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 paradiddle. Then it sends you to the left hand, and it's great. We still can't. It's so good that we still can't play it. No, it's gotten better. But yeah,
especially putting the feet to that second measure
with the it's just syncopation like... is tough. But didn't we? Yeah. I think we have a video of that. Like we have a reel of that of us playing it or something. Or...
We do. We did that with the. I think we did that with that giveaway.
Yeah. Anyway.
That we did.
So yeah, I would add Putitas in there too. And again, that's a two height thing most of the time as well. So, see my next one, doubles versus diddles. So knowing the difference, this is something that I talk about a lot with my kids and understanding, the front of hand versus back of hand concept. So, the way that I explain it, a double. So if you think about like double beat, right? Double beat is two notes and two wrist motions. Or sorry, a double is two beats. Hold on a second. A double is two notes and two wrist motions, right? And then usually like one arm motion. Yeah, because your arm should be involved a little bit as well. A diddle is two notes and one motion, one wrist motion. So inherently, diddles are faster. There's kind of a threshold that you eventually cross. You're playing doubles, your wrist is moving two times, and then you speed up and you speed up and you speed up. And eventually you get to that like diddle territory. That's, I don't really know where the line is. It's not like a super fine line. It just depends on like, you know, how your chops are. But there's definitely like a line where, okay, pretty much everybody past this BPM is going to be playing diddles now, you know, based on whether you're playing 16ths or triplets or eighth notes or whatever. But understanding the difference. And so when you're playing a double, understanding that your back fingers are going to still make contact with the stick. You're not going to let go. You're not going to just rely on rebound or gravity to create the second note for you. And you're using quite a bit more wrist to create that second note. Then once you get past that threshold and it becomes a diddle, that's when you're relying mostly on your fulcrum and your wrist kind of doesn't do a whole lot and your arm sort of takes over. So you go to, I talk to my kids about, you know, like ratios. So like a normal rebound stroke would be like 90-10, 90% wrist, 10% arm. And then as you get closer to diddles or, you know, open rolls, then you kind of get to like more of a 50-50, and your arm starts taking over and your wrist starts doing less work. So understanding the difference in those doubles and diddles and when to apply those is pretty important, because if you think about the speed of double beat, you know, most groups play that somewhere around like 120. And so if you're trying to go cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, but you're trying to get that just with your fulcrum, just the front of your hand, it's going to be really hard to control that and to create the correct rhythm just by a lot, you know, relying on gravity. Now if you're trying to go to get, you could probably do that as diddles because it's just closer together. So yeah, the difference between those is really important.
Yeah. Something I like to do is when a kid is not getting, like they can play double beat all day, but when it comes to like diddles, their brain is not comprehending. What I like to do is tell them to start playing double beat and then, like, just do it with like one hand and then just slowly start moving it faster. And as they get faster, just start bringing the stick height down and then start kind of realizing when the change occurs to kind of start using the arm, like kind of using a push motion a little bit and adjusting the fulcrum to where the double stroke is still happening, but it's with a different type of approach. And that tends to help half of them at least start to understand it better.
And the tricky thing is, like you said, it's different for every person. It's like there's definitely like a range where it's I talk to my kids, especially my snares and quads. I'll say like, hey, guys, that's a gray area right there where you're like, it's kind of a double, but it's kind of a diddle. You're going to have to use some wrist and finger assist. But like, and those are the hardest ones to control, in my opinion. So it's like big fat triplet rolls, like in our ballad's like, you know, 64 BPM, which then we just double it to like 128. But it's got like big six tuplet rolls. Like, that's hard to manage. It's kind of one of those gray areas until you can get your heights way up, and then they do become diddles. But we talk about that all the time. So, that's tough, that gray area in the middle. But understanding the difference, I think, is really important. And I like that kind of just like, you don't always have to like practice it and then like 10 clicks faster, practice it 10 clicks. Like, you can accel or ritardando into things. And that's pretty helpful. But honestly, you know, we can sit here and talk about that all day, but that's usually something that you just have to sit down and figure out on your own. You know, like, if you've got a teacher that can give you some tips, that's great, and some feedback. But the way that I figured that out was listening to my teachers and then going home and woodshedding and figuring that out.
Yeah. Figuring out how it works for you individually. Yeah. That was my next one too, was proper roll technique. And so the only thing I'm going to add to that, because it's kind of the same stuff, is when you are doing a roll, think about the way that you also prep for that roll the same way you would prep for a regular note. So some issues I have in my drumline sometimes is, let's say we have a kind of just a big fat roll, that's kind of one of those. What are you laughing at me for?
When you did that, like, it's just fun.
Oh,
and kind of sounded like, yeah, kind of sounded like him too.
I thought of Nacho Libre the other day, Nacho. And I really want to sit down and watch that. Yeah.
I used my hand.
I thought of when he's like, Encarnacion. I just love it. It's just such a,
come on, baby.
Oh my gosh. Such a funny movie. That's another, yeah. These are the classic, orphans, chips.
Classic inside.
Anyway, joke. Back to percussion. We should do every other episode as a movie review. Dude. Or we act out an entire movie.
Oof.
Uh-oh.
Like, percussion,
you
haven't watched enough of Parks and Rec, but there's a really funny episode where...
I know, I'm sorry.
Andy Dwyer is like, they're like hosting an event for, it was for like Leslie's campaign, like her big donors are like watching her speech or whatever at like a town hall type thing. And the cable goes out. And so Ron Swanson's, he's like outside trying to like hijack the neighbor's cable to fix it so that they can get the people to continue donating to her campaign. And so to kill time, Andy is in there like acting out different movies, and he like acts out Rambo and like Babe, the pig movie, just like really random video, you know, really random,
whatever he can think of.
To act out is hilarious. Anyway.
Well, I don't know how we're going to get any listeners back, because now we just, everyone deleted the episode.
Whoever listens gets $5.
Anyway. So when you're playing a big fat roll, understanding that the prep for that first diddle kind of needs to be the height that you're going to play that roll. So like I said, my drumline right now, we've got some issues just cleaning up big rolls because all four of our snares are just not prepping the same way. That's just something to keep an eye out for. And as you're learning how to play diddles or applying them to your show music or whatever exercises, that you prep for a roll kind of the same way you prep for anything else. So think about that, because that can always make, you know, I always have kids like the first diddle is bad. So it's because the approach to it is not the same as prepping for everything else. So that was, I just wanted to add that to the end of that segment.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, I guess I'll add more onto that. The first diddle, also that tap space in there. I didn't put that on mine. I didn't see it on your list either. So we might as well talk about it real quick right now. That's just that interpretation of that first diddle, making sure that you're not crushing that space. You know, if you have a tap roll that starts with an accent and then your diddle starts on the left hand, that there's that, you know, there's that little bit of space where if you would have started right on the roll, it would be where that second note of the first diddle would be. There's like just a little gap there, versus if you're playing like a putada rhythm, like right, left, left, where the double is evenly spaced between, you know, the other two notes. Just listening for that tap space too. And that comes a lot. If you get your left hand up to the correct height, it creates that tap space. So I'm justifying my comment here. It's the same. It works.
Yeah.
I don't know whose turn it is. I feel like correct. It's yours. Mine? I don't know.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'll go. One thing I'm having issues, and I feel like this whole thing with me is just issues that I'm having with my own kids, but marking time, it, like get your feet moving with everything that you play. So even if you're preparing for auditions or practicing your show music, like get your feet going, because sometimes we can play stuff really well, and then the moment we have to move our feet, it gets dirty again because the feet applying to the music somehow just makes it worse. So I've never really had someone over like really go too fast with their feet. It's always just delaying. So marking time, moving your feet with the music, it needs to be happening as early as possible. ALAP, ALAP, kind of like ASAP.
Yeah. And I had some marking time on there too. Honestly, usually like double beat is one of the hardest ones to get. Wouldn't you say?
I realize I just said, did I say as early as possible?
I don't remember.
I said ALAP.
Oh yeah, you did.
Sorry. I'm an idiot. Go ahead.
There is an L in the word.
Yeah, but I'm still stupid.
Yeah, like making sure you can mark time to double beat. That's a syncopated exercise.
Yes.
That if you can get your feet locked in on the metronome with that, you're usually going to be okay. And then like a 16th grid or a triplet grid, if you can mark time to like both of those, you know, without, it's when those accents start moving away from the downbeat. And if your foot kind of wants to follow the accent sometimes. So like what I'll see a lot is instead of, you know, you get the person that is like, their foot starts trying to move with the double or whatever. So just watching out for that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, let's see. My next one is ability to accept criticism. So my students will tell you, I give them a lot of comments, and it's all constructive criticism. I don't know what teacher would ever, like what good teacher at least would ever just criticize a kid to make them like to break them down or whatever. I hope I haven't done that. Some kids have probably felt that way.
I always have middle school kids that like, I'll say, hey, your hand looks weird. And they're like, my hands look fine. I'm like, okay. You're right.
Actually, two years ago, I had some parents send me like a big huffy puffy email about like, well, you told my kid and they said that you said their hand looks all wrong. I can't believe you would say something like that. And they said that you said it to them in front of the whole class. It was like, yeah, I say that probably 50 times a class to all the kids. Like, hey, fix that. Hey, your hand is wrong. Hey, your hand, whatever. Like, yo, Jackie.
Yeah.
What? I don't know. I don't have any kids named Jackie, and I don't think there is anybody alive named Jackie anymore. like, fix your thumb. You don't have a fulcrum. Right now, to my beginners, I'll literally just be like, you don't have a fulcrum. That's cool. Let's fix it. Like, you know, I'm kind of sarcastic about things like that. But being able to accept criticism and just knowing that, like, your instructor was put there to help make you better and to help make the group better by making individuals better. And so, you know, they're not picking on you. If you feel like there's a comment that keeps getting said, like, you know, I have certain students and I'm like, hey, like, you know, left hand diddles or like secondary fulcrum in your left hand is open or what, or bass drums, like, you need to make sure that you're dropping your arm or whatever. Like, I've got kids that I make the same comments to all the time. And yeah, that gets frustrating as a teacher because you don't feel like they're listening to you or whatever. But accepting criticism, especially when we're thinking about like an audition and trying to make a drum line, trying to audition for a group. If you are going through an audition process, hopefully as a full group, and then, you know, the way that I run my things is like, it's a full group audition and I just kind of give people feedback. And then if from day one to day two, they fix that issue, like that's a huge, like smiley face gold star on the Google Doc. Like, this kid is going to work hard. So being able to accept criticism and not let it break you down is a really important skill. And that's honestly for anybody. That's for me too. Like when you tell me when we're done recording today and you have like your list of things that I did wrong for the podcast, I need to be accepting of those.
Your performance review. Yeah.
I'm trying to get a raise.
My next one went kind of in the same way, except this one's more on like a
more relevant
your own mental level, I guess. But when you get feedback, it's kind of the same thing as when you make a mistake and accepting it and just being like, it's okay. Cause I'll have kids that like, they'll make a mistake and it like fumbles their whole next 5 minutes or like something like that. And it's like, this is an art form. It's a process that could take you weeks to understand a concept or something. And so, especially on a drum line, like if you're going through an audition process or show music or a performance, never give away the mistakes that you make, whether it's in your face. I mean, your director's going to know that you made a mistake because it's a very visual activity. So if your hands aren't moving the same as the center snares, then you probably made a mistake, which is fine, especially in the early parts of the year. But don't give it away with your you have this on your list, but like aura, your presence. Don't give it away with your aura.
It's like,
don't make a face. Don't turn your head. Don't look at your director.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Just make the mistake, accept it, and adjust and move on.
Kenny Martin always used to tell me, like, I meant to do that. That's like the attitude you've got to have. I meant to play it like that. And that's even though that's not true. And you messed up, but you just have to have that attitude of like, okay, I messed up. So what? I'm just gonna like keep going.
Yeah, and in a healthy way where you're like, don't be like, oh, I messed up. Whatever. I don't care if I mess up. But in a constructive, well, there's a mistake I need to fix for the future.
I like that one.
So,
my next one is like presence, and then in parentheses I have aura, which is like I feel like that's
we just talked about that
kids say now. Okay, sorry. Like your presence, your some ensembles will call it like your character, right? Of your show. There are certain times when you're like, as marching band has evolved and we get into more modern things, they're like, you know, performers are expected to have some character. And, but generally, I mean, the character of a drum line is like pretty intense, staring straight forward, not being affected by anything. Like Kevin was saying, if you make a mistake, you just keep like, you know, we talk about like finding the smallest point that you can find far out away, slightly above the horizon, and just like staring a hole through that thing. Almost trying to create like a lack of visual information so that you can just listen, you know, with it as much brain power as you can. But, you know, it also goes with like your posture. Like, you know, if you're hunkered down inside and hunched over inside your carrier and your arms are really close to your side, and like, that's not like a powerful, confident, you don't want to be cocky about things, but you want to project confidence and strength and, like you want, especially if you're thinking about an audition, like you want people to, it's a visual activity too. You want to look good. You want to try to look like your center snare or your section leader or whatever. So I think that presence or aura is really important. And I look for that.
Yeah. Just stand there and just don't look like a weenie.
Yeah, don't look like a weenie. That's a good shirt. I've got kids.
Stand
I've got,
there and look aggressive.
I've even got kids that are, you know, sixth graders this year that I've only taught for like 2 or 3 weeks now, that already I'm like, that kid's going to be on the drum line. Just because of the way they're standing and moving their sticks. It's like that's a snare player. That's a quad player or whatever.
Well, this is we can roll through last couple of yours, but just continue to practice effectively and efficiently. I still have, you know, I think this is every kid ever, but learning the process of actually practicing something you can't play and not just always jumping on and playing something you can, because that's not going to make you better. So if you have show music, audition music, whatever it is, apply all the things that we've talked about: downstrokes, your upstrokes, rebound strokes, your approach to the instrument, moving your feet, all the things. It's a lot. It is a lot to be able to do all this really well. And so the kids that are the most successful at it are the ones that when they get home in the evenings, they eat dinner and they jump on their practice pad. And instead of, you know, I'm not against gamers or whatever, but like instead of jumping onto your gaming console and doing that for four hours.
Stickers. I know how you feel about gamers.
I do not play games, nor do I hate them. But I think that, you know, I'll hear of my students who are like, I played 4 hours last night. It's like, okay, did you practice? Yeah. No. It's like, okay. So, you know, spending some time on your pad, it has to become a hobby. It can't just be like a class subject that you're taking. Right. If you want to be really good and successful, it has to become like something where you enjoy your pad out and playing instead of just doing it in rehearsal or just doing it at school. So, really effective small chunk practicing is probably one of your best habits to get into to be really successful at this. So let's roll through your final thoughts on your last couple of bullet points.
Go off, King. So the last couple I've got, listening skills. You're trying to type something on my outline where we have a shared Google Doc.
No,
right,
I'm sorry.
Here.
I just tapped the screen.
So listening skills, obviously really important as for any musician, but when you're trying to be on a drum line and be clean, sound the same, all all of that stuff, it's important to have listening skills and to understand where you're listening in what environment. So, you know, usually that's the center snare. If you are a quad player, then you're listening in towards the snares. If you're a bass drum player, usually listening in towards the snares, or a metronome if you're in the back of the ensemble, right? It just, if you do make the drum line, then you'll kind of understand. Hopefully you have a teacher that says like, okay guys, right here, we need to listen back to the met, or we need to listen back to the bass drums for this entrance. We need to watch or do a combination of watching the drum major for these four bars and then making sure we anticipate. Like there's all sorts of different listening environments that you can be in, but you know, just basic listening skills are, can I play in time with a metronome? And then can I play in time with the person next to me? Even if they're maybe slightly away from the metronome, you have to be able to immediately adjust and stay with them. You know, like I've been a center snare a few times, and I know Kevin has as well. And like, that's a lot of responsibility. But ultimately, it's kind of nice because like no matter what, you're kind of right, you know, even at the detriment of the entire show. I've had students like that were center snares and they're like, no, I'm right. And they refuse to bend. And they've just like, you know, brought things to a screeching halt. But you have to be able to listen and play with the person that you're standing next to.
Yeah. And one thing you could do to help your own listening skills is just record yourself playing something. And then see if you can play with it perfectly back. Yeah. Like on your phone, just record you playing a chunk of your show music and kind of give yourself a count off so you can start accurately. But yeah, just get used to hearing and being able to adjust on the fly is a really good skill that younger kids really don't have until it's something that they work on. But yeah, I like that.
And then my last one was physical fitness. So just making sure that like if you want to be on the drum line, you are... like that you're able to, number one, wear that drum. Like I've had in the past, like kids that seem like they're like 4 feet tall that want to play quads. And it's like, I mean, it doesn't matter how good your hands are. Like, I just don't think you can physically hold those, you know? But physical fitness in that like marching band again is evolving, and it's a very physically demanding activity a lot of the time now. And every year it seems like our choreo gets a little bit more complicated, or, you know, oh, we're good. Yeah. We're jazz running with drums on now. Great. You know, just things like that. So, I know my kids do, you know, like a lot of bands have conditioning. There's like, you know, Forte Athletics, not a sponsor, hit us up. There's guys that do things like that. But our band does conditioning. A lot of my drumline kids went on like summer runs and things like that, and did, you know, especially the kids that are going to play quads. I'm like, hey, like, you boys better be doing squats this summer and deadlifts and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're really, really trying to, your goal is to make it on the drumline, you need to also be like, okay with the physical demands of that too. And like, don't complain about it. It's okay. The drum's heavy. So yeah, it's drums are heavy. Sorry. No one wants to hear you complain about it all the time. So yeah, just making sure that you're ready for that. Anything on that?
No.
All right, I think it can be,
I think it can be as like important mentally as it is physically, just cause I've got a girl on our tenor line this year. That's, I don't know how tall she is, but she's maybe 5 feet. I don't know. She's smaller than 5 feet, I'm sure. And she's like, I've never heard her complain one time. You know what I mean? Awesome. It's like, so it could be as the mental game as much as the physical game.
I also had a girl
having a good,
go ahead. Sorry. I had a girl on my quad line.
I was just going to say she's never complained.
Say, I also had a girl that did not complain. Anyway.
So just if you want to carry the drum, you want to play, then just
dude.
Do
and
it.
One thing I was going to say though, it, this mentally. Reminded me. So we had eighth grade night at our football game last night. You know, if someone didn't know what that is like, we invite our eighth graders to come and they learn some stand tunes and they get to sit in the stands with our high school band and play. And then like, after we do our halftime show, they come out on the field and they like play the fight song or whatever. Really fun. It's a good way to kind of get the kids to see what it's like and everything. Anyway, you know, we bought new Pearl drums like 2 years ago for the high school because I was sick of those Randall May carriers and I went with Pearl. And the Pearl drums are really nice, but especially those quads, they're quite a bit heavier. And so we still have our old Yamahas and I just keep them for like a drumline prep class that I do with my middle school kids in the spring. And then for eighth grade night, they're like our second set of drums. Anyway, I had my leadership kids like working on getting those drums ready yesterday. And one of my percussion captain quad playing kid, he like picks up the Yamaha quads and he's like, oh gosh, like it's like, these are so much lighter. Like I don't remember what he said. He's like, I could cook if I was wearing these or something. I don't remember what he said.
I could cook.
He's like, well, yeah, I mean, maybe, but there's just like so much. Yeah. There's just, I do feel bad slightly is like, man, I know those Pearl quads sound really good, but they're, I don't know what's so different about them. Like the shells are thicker. They're really heavy.
Yeah. So, that's unfortunate.
Nothing against Pearl, nothing against Yamaha. I've had and used both and have had success with both, but those Pearl quads are, you need some big kids to carry those.
Yeah.
Some big boys, big girls.
Yeah. Well, guys, hopefully that was a lot of good info. You have anything else you want to add?
I'm regretting my last words being big boys and big girls just then, but now the episode's over and we can't
take
it back.
You were talking about tenor. Yeah. So cool. Well, guys, don't forget about the Fall Sound Solution project from Black Swamp and Steve Weiss. So from September 23rd to October 7th, you can save 15% on Black Swamp gear at Steve Weiss Music.
Yeah, get over there and get what you need. Remember, there's no code needed. Just great instruments and great savings.
We'll see you guys on the next one.
Later. Thank you.